The Fairy Tale Castle logo of Walt Disney presents. A sensation of floating among fluffy, silver-lined clouds in an Asia blue sky. Saving Mr. Banks. The pale blue sky darkens. The clouds are like cream-coloured cotton wool. Tall, thin palm trees hove into view. The place is Maryborough, Australia. The date is 1906. A woman in a straw boater and high neck dress pushes a pram in front of a white pergola in a formal garden.
Winds in the east. Mist coming in. Like something is brewing, about to begin.
A young redhead sits with her arms crossed.
Can't put my finger on what lies in store, but I feel what's to happen, or happened, before.
A woman with tight auburn curls sits at her desk with her arms crossed in front of her. The date is April 1961. Next to a cup of tea, there's a copy of the teachings of Gurdjieff, a small seated Buddha, and a family photograph. The woman wakes from her reverie, her red lips tight, her expression stern. She stands up from her desk and smooths the front of her tailored brown jacket. A man in a raincoat is at her pink door.
Mr. Russell.
The house is one of several white-painted London terraced houses with black wrought iron railings and a cherry tree in full blossom outside.
Like pink clouds on sticks.
Excuse me?
The cherry blossom. I was trying to think of what it looks like.
The car should be here by now. May I use the phone?
I cancelled it.
Russell stops in his tracks.
What? Pamela?
Mrs. Travers.
Mrs. Travers? Why would you cancel the car?
I shan't be going.
We've been through this.
I've changed my mind.
You made an agreement. You understand? A verbal agreement.
Why in the world are you speaking to me as if I were a neonate?
He's going to...
What? What is he going to do? Sue? He's very welcome to every penny I don't possess.
Look, I've represented you for a long time. I like to think of you as a friend.
Her eyebrows shoot up.
Yes, I like to think it. Believe me, I know it's not reciprocated. I would never suggest anything that will cause you anguish, but there's no more money, Pamela. Mrs. Travers, simply no more. Sales have dried up, no more royalties, you refuse to write further books, so... Yeah, do you understand? I'm frightened you don't understand what that means.
I know what he's going to do to her. She'll be cavorting and twinkling and careening towards a happy ending like a kamikaze.
We've been trying to do this deal for 20 years. He's agreed to both your stipulations. No animation, script approval.
Use her to pay my bills. If I believed in a hell, I'd be sitting in its waiting room.
Script approval. He's never granted anything like that before. I don't know what else to do.
Russell brings his hand to his face. Mrs. Travers snorts.
Where's Polly?
I fired her. It's just as well. It seems I can't afford her anymore, anyway.
Russell covers his face again. Mrs. Travers eyes him thoughtfully.
You don't know what she means to me.
Polly?
Of course not, Polly! For sake. Los Angeles.
She slumps down in a chair.
You only have to go and work there for 2 weeks. Collaborate. You haven't signed over the rights yet.
Yet?
You must make this work, Mrs. Travers.
Oh, I must I?
You need the money. I don't want to see you go...
Stop saying money. It's a filthy, disgusting word.
I'm picking up the phone now, Mrs. Travers.
I have final say.
He puts down the receiver.
You do?
I have final say. And if I don't like what they're doing to her...
Then you don't sign the papers. You can't make the film unless you grant the rights. It's an exploratory trip. What do you say?
Mrs. Travers looks about her with an unhappy frown.
I want to keep my house.
In 1906, the little girl who has long gingery curls and red cheeks admires the fairy house she's made with a leaf on four stalks, topped with a pink petal. A male shadow falls across her as she lies face down on the lawn.
Excuse me, ma'am. Have you seen my daughter?
A handsome, dark-haired man looks down at her.
I was quite sure I left her around here somewhere. Her name is Helen. No, Shirley. Good Lord. I've quite forgotten. Could it be Prunella?
No.
Not Pamela?
No.
I'm sure I have a special name for her.
Ginty.
Well, thank you, ma'am. Ginty it is, of course. Yeah. Now, have you seen her?
It's me.
He plunges towards her to take a close look at her face.
Gosh, so it is. Thank goodness for that. Oh, I was positive I was going to be beheaded for losing Her Highness, the Royal Princess, Ginty MacFeatherFluffy.
Don't lose me.
Never. I promise. I'll never lose you. You ready? You sure? The adventure's about to begin. Come on.
Ginty jumps on her father's back.
Oh, there we go.
He runs through a small white pergola. In a plane, Pamela Travers is struggling to put her hand luggage into the compartment above her seat.
Can I help you?
I'm perfectly capable, thank you. They've used all the space. So greedy.
I'll take it, madam. I can put it up in front.
I don't want it up in front. I would like it here in the corresponding holding area for my assigned seat.
The flight's closing in just a few moments, madam. I'll have to take it. You can move mine instead. It's the grey one.
A red-headed young mother with a baby smiles obligingly. The stewardess moves the case. The woman smiles at Pamela.
Will the child be a nuisance? It's an 11-hour flight.
As Pamela grimaces, the woman sinks into her seat with her baby. Pamela sits bolt upright, her forehead furrowed.
I hope we crash.
Ginty and her father trot home.
Hey, where's the carriage?
Carriage? Who needs a carriage?
Darling, we have so many...
A leisurely stroll is a gift, darling. It's a gift. Now, Billy, are you staying?
Mm-mm.
You're coming with us?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
The father checks his watch as his wife addresses a maid.
Thank you so much for everything.
Thank you, miss.
Right, hurry up, everyone. We mustn't be late for the train.
The wife takes her baby from the maid.
All aboard! Everybody ready?
Yes.
Ginty smiles at the portly maid.
See you soon, Katie, Nana.
Take care, love.
All right. Everybody ready? Walking bus. Left, right.
Miss.
Left, right. Left.
Miss. Oh.
The younger of the two maids hands the wife a plant.
Thank you.
The wife, Margaret, looks back at the handsome porticoed and turreted house she's leaving behind.
Left, left, right, left, and one, two, three, new town, new job, new bank, new life. Come on, my little ducklings. Right, left, left, come on.
The little family loaded down with luggage march past dual-faced neighbours and smart townspeople. They come to a railway station. Ginty looks up at the Australia Gold Coastway Railway Board, listing all the destinations, ending at Allura, 325 miles and 16 hours and 25 minutes away.
Allura.
Carrying a case in each hand, she goes into the station. The train sets off across the barren terrain. A cloud of smoke funneling from its chimney. Ginty, in her brown sailor-collared coat, stands at the rear of the train above the single-track railway line, looking back in the direction in which they've come. Inside the train, Margaret, cuddling their baby, looks uneasily across at her husband as he sips from a hip flask. Outside, Ginty's usually cheery face is solemn as she moves further and further away from her old life. The train smoke eventually blankets the sky. Fluffy white clouds stretch as far as the eye can see outside Pamela's aeroplane window. She wakes with a start.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are beginning our descent into Los Angeles.
An unsettled look crosses her face. In the airport terminal, she strides across the concourse carrying her bags, in brown gloved hands, her mustard green coat over the shoulders of her mustard green suit. Ahead of her, three men wait with name cards. She peers at them all with a frown. One is from Warner Brothers, the second from MGM, and the third reads, Walt Disney Presents P.L. Travers.
Well, he does he?
Travers, P.L. Travers?
Mrs.
Okay. Well, welcome, Mrs. P.L. Travers. Welcome to the City of Angels. Let me take those.
Perfectly capable. Never mind.
The balding bespectacled driver carries her bags to a black limousine parked outside.
Sun came out to say hello just to you.
Don't be preposterous. It smells like...
jasmine.
Chlorine. Then sweat. Oh, it's dreadful.
She sinks down into the back of the limo. The driver sniffs the air. The black limo motors down a long, straight road, passing endless lines of telegraph wires. Pamela peers out of the window with a crease etched between her eyebrows as she contemplates a car wash, and then the two crystal decanters, cut glass tumblers, and three roses in a vase in the back of the limo.
Absurd.
You right back there, Mrs. P.L. Travers?
It's not Mrs. P.L., it's just Mrs. Oh, it's too hot.
No problemo. No problemo. We got a brand new air conditioning system, missus. Yeah. That'll make you feel like you're in good old Angerland again. Well, you know, things they can put in cars these days. Gosh, oh my.
She closes the glass partition between them.
No problemo.
With an insouciant smile, he drives on towards the lavish, manicured grounds of the Beverly Hills Hotel. Porter carries Pamela's bags.
And here we are, ma'am.
As he unlocks her door, she picks up the bags and breezes in past him.
Ma'am? Would you like me to unpack for you, ma'am?
Young man, if it is your ambition to handle ladies' garments, may I suggest you take employment in a launderette? Odd.
She picks up her luggage and comes into her suite.
Oh, dear.
It's full of stuffed toys.
For heaven's sake. What on earth is...
And Mickey Mouse balloons.
How?
Her eyes light on a basket of fruit. She shrugs off her coat.
No. This will never do. Absolutely no pears.
She goes to a window. In Australia, Ginty, her sister Biddy, Margaret and the baby trudge up a hot and dusty hill, their father leading the way towards a rustic house with a white horse standing outside.
A palace. Complete with mighty steed.
And chickens.
Oh, my.
Oh, we'll make beautiful memories here, my angel.
He gives his wife an encouraging peck on the cheek.
Girls, come on.
He runs towards their new home.
In this house... get to share a room.
Margaret looks around at the landscape in this remote spot, then follows the rest with her babe in arms and the plant the maid gave her in her hand. A pair sinks down into the waters of the Turquoise Hotel swimming pool, followed by a second one and a third. She dusts off her hands and steps out of her brown court shoes. She picks up a basket of Disney toys and stuffs them into a wardrobe.
How old do they think I am? 5 years old.
She picks up Disney's Winnie the Pooh.
Poor A.A. Milne. Ghastly business. Duck, dog, out.
She stuffs every single one of the toys into the wardrobe. She goes next door.
Much better.
She stops dead. A giant Mickey Mouse is sitting on her bed. She grabs him by his black nose and seats him under a window with his back to the room.
And you can stay there until you learn the art of subtlety.
She brings her Buddha figurine and several bottles of pills from her carpet bag. As she retrieves her coat, she spots a small, black, rectangular plastic object on the glass coffee table. She picks it up and presses one of its buttons. A small black and white TV set comes on. She presses another button.
Ah!
It's Walt Disney.
There you are.
Don't worry. There's nothing wrong with your television set. This is a Pixie Bell. The sound is much too high for human ears. Oh, there you are, Tink.
Tinkerbell flies through the air.
Hey! Get that stuff off of me.
Pamela watches Ryan.
You know, if you're familiar with our story of Peter Pan, you know, a little sprinkling of Tinkerbell's fairy dust can make you fly. Where are you going, Tink? Haven't you forgotten something?
Off. That's how we deal with you.
She waits on the red carpet in the forecourt of the hotel in her all-brown outfit. She peers down at the limo as it comes into view. Her driver gets out with a cheery smile.
Good morning, missus.
It's not missus. It's... never mind. We're just not going to get it right, are we?
What's that?
Will it be the same driver every day?
Yes, ma'am. I am all yours. Hey, sun came out again.
You say it as if you're surprised, as if the sun were particular about for whom it appears. It seems you think that I am responsible for its miraculous dawning every day. For heaven's sake, it's California.
Certainly is.
She gets in wearing an impatient scowl.
So much rather be accountable for the rain.
Oh, that's sad.
Sad is entirely the wrong emotion. Shan't bother explaining why. It'll just zip.
Okie dokie.
She looks condescendingly at the back of his head.
The rain brings life.
He turns to look at her.
So does the sun.
Be quiet.
Yes, ma'am.
He drives from the hotel into the gateway of Walt Disney Productions. Three men waiting on a pavement peer at the arriving limo. One of them waves and grins. The two dark-haired young men next to him smile excitedly. She eyes them quizzically.
I'll get that, sir.
Got it?
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Pamela.
It is so discomforting to hear a perfect stranger use my first name. Mrs. Travers, please.
I do apologize, Mrs. Travers. I'm Dunn DeGrady, the scriptwriter.
Co-scriptwriter? I shall certainly be having my say, Mr. DeGrady.
DeGrady. Wonderful. I welcome your input.
If indeed we ever sign off on a script.
Right. This is the rest of your team. This is Dick and Bob Sherman, music and lyrics, voice, the one and only Mrs. P.L. Travers, the creator of our beloved Mary.
Poppins.
Who else?
Mary Poppins. Never, ever just Mary. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Oh,
fear we shan't be acquainted for very long.
Why is that?
Because these books simply do not lend themselves to chirping and prancing. No, certainly not a musical. Now, where is Mr. Disney? I should so much like to get this started and finished as briskly as is humanly possible. Perhaps someone could point me in his direction. I'd be so grateful. Thank you.
We were hoping to give you a little tour of the studio.
No, thank you.
Walt just wanted to show the place off.
No one likes a show off.
Mrs. Travers, it's quite a long way.
Not a musical?
The two Sherman brothers accompany Don and Pamela in a Walt Disney golf cart.
I am perfectly capable of walking.
She hangs onto the roof of the small electric conveyance as it turns a sharp corner. As they arrive at an office, a curvy secretary with lacquered, flicked-up hair jumps up to greet them with a ready smile.
Good morning.
Could you let Mr. Disney know I've arrived, please?
Absolutely. Please have a seat.
Oh, no, there's no need.
He'll be just a moment. Mrs. Travers, why don't we sit?
Dolly, the secretary, takes Pamela's coat, and Pamela perches on a settee next to Don, who blinks awkwardly behind his owl-like specs.
She's here.
Word of advice, Mrs. Travers, if I may.
You may. Whether I heed it or not will be another matter entirely.
Well, it's just that he can't stand being called Mr. Disney. We're all on a first-name basis here.
Walt Disney comes into view, his row of Oscar statuettes behind him. His arms outstretched.
Well, here you are, at last.
Oh, my dear gal, you can't imagine how excited I am to finally meet you.
Well, it's an honor, Mr. Dizzy.
Oh, Walt, man, you gotta call me Walt. Mr. Dizzy was my old man, isn't that right, Doc?
Absolutely, Walt.
Come here. Tommy, say hello to the one and only Pamela Travers.
It's so nice to meet you.
Pamela swans past.
You know, I can't believe it. P.L. Travers right here in my office. After, right, all these years, almost 20 of them?
Yes.
20 long years. I wish you could have seen me then, Pam. Lean as a whippet I was. A racehorse. Well, anyway. Now here you are, and look at you. Oh, I could just eat you up.
That wouldn't be appropriate.
She takes a seat.
You know what, when Diane here was about 7 years old... Oh, can I get you something to drink? A coffee or something?
A pot of tea would be most welcome.
Anyway, I was about 7 years old, and I was walking past her room, and she was on her bed reading to her sister, Sharon. And those girls, they were just giggling their little socks off. Tommy.
Yes?
Hot tea for Pamela and me.
Right away, Walt.
Ah, you're a doll. She is. She's a doll. Anyways, I asked them, I said, girls, what's so funny? And Diane said to me, why, Daddy, Mary Poppins. Well, I didn't even know what a Mary Poppins was. Mm-hmm. But then she gave me one of your books, and oh, by gosh, my imagination caught on fire. Absolutely on fire. And those embers have burned ever since, as you know.
I do, yes.
20 years.
So you keep saying.
Pam, a man cannot break a promise he's made to his kids, no matter how long it takes for him to... make it come true. Now, you kept me dangling all this time, but now I gotcha.
Gotcha, indeed. Mr. Disney, if you have dangled, it is at the end of a rope you have fashioned for yourself. I was perfectly clear when you approached me 20 years ago that she wasn't for sale, and I was clear again when you approached me the following year, and clear again when you approached me every annum for the subsequent 18 years, and quite honestly, I feel corralled.
Oh, now, Pam, the last thing I want to do is make you feel as though...
Would you mind? My name is Mrs. Travers. I do...
See, I promise them, Pam. Now, that's a fact. You got kids?
No, well, not precisely.
I have never, absolutely never, gone back on a promise I made to either one of my daughters. Now, that's what being daddy is all about, right?
Is it?
You know, see, our motion picture is not just going to make my kids happy. It's going to make all kids happy, adults too. Because my guys are going to do things with it that are revolutionary, Pam, revolutionary. Your Mary Poppins is going to literally fly off the pages of your books. Oh, thank you, Tommy. This magical woman who has only lived inside your head, well, you are going to be able to meet her, speak to her. You're going to hear her sing.
Now, this singing, I'm very glad you've come to that. Milk in first, please. Then the tea. And a spoonful of sugar.
He overheaps the sugar.
Now, you don't intend for this film to be a musical.
I absolutely do.
No.
No.
No. Mr. Disney, Mary Poppins does not sing.
Yes, she does.
When?
In your books.
No, those aren't songs. They're recitations. She's not a giddy... woman, she doesn't jig about. I mean, singing is frivolous. It's wholly unnecessary. And a governess, an educatress. No, it would simply ruin it. I won't have her turned into one of your silly cartoons.
Walt takes a sip of tea and turns away for a moment, his expression tight.
Now, Pam.
He sits down in the chair next to hers and takes her hand.
I want you to know. The last thing I would do, the very last thing, is tarnish a story I have cherished. Now, the pages of your books are worn to tissue. They are dog-eared and fallen out because I have pored over them, gripped and tormented, because I love her, Pam. I love Mary Poppins. And you've got to share her with me.
She frowns at him, her forehead heavily creased.
And nothing happens without you say so.
Quite right.
It's all right here in the rights agreement that was approved by your agent, Dermot.
Dermot. A live-action film, no animation.
Live-action. Here's a pen.
I'd like that on tape.
On tape?
Your promise and all the conversations we have here, on tape.
She puts her rights back into her stiff brown handbag. Now Walt's forehead is creased.
Uh-huh, there you are.
He smiles weakly.
Mary Poppins and the Bankses, they're family to me.
I understand that. I do.
Well, then, Shall we begin?
Let's make something wonderful.
Well, let's see if that's at all possible.
She half shakes his hand and comes out of the office, noticing a photo of Disney riding a toy train. Please Be Quiet reads a small board with a Mickey Mouse logo on it hanging on the door of a rehearsal room. Inside, Don is setting up a tape machine. Pamela sitting at a table with Bob and Dick Sherman scowls as Dolly brings in the second of four plates of goodies.
Testing 1, 2.
Now a dish of iced buns.
What is all this jollification?
We've got a whole script to get through. It's going to be a long day, Mrs. Dick.
Pamela gives Don a look.
Mrs. Travers.
Save a starving country with benefaction from this room alone. It's just so vulgar. Did you turn on the thing? Yes. Now, let us begin.
Dick Sherman beams.
Scene one.
Exterior. Cherry Tree Lane.
What's ext?
Exterior. It means the scene takes place outside.
Oh, I see. It is an abbreviation. I'm so sorry, Mr. DeGrange. Do you feel that you should be?
Oh, please, be my guest, Miss Travers.
I do think it's best. I have the most practice. Readings of my books, you know?
Absolutely.
Anyway, scene one, exterior. 17 Cherry Tree Lane, London, day. Yes, that's good. That can stay.
That's just the scene heading.
Although I do think we should say number 17 instead of just 17. It's proper, yes?
No one's going to see it.
I will see it. Write it down. Write it down. Chop, chop. Is that on the tape? We got that?
Yes.
Very good. Onwards.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
A jelly with a Mickey Mouse face.
Is that a joke?
Excuse me?
Do you think you are a comedian?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Well, it's unbelievable. In the way.
Dolly, I think we're all set with food. Thank you.
Scene one, exterior, number 17, Cherry Tree Lane, London, day. But a one-man band... Oh, the rumour is that this is to be your Mr. Van Dyke, is that right?
We do hope so.
Well, we'll see about that. It's a horrid idea.
Dick is one of the greats.
She rounds on Bob.
Dick Van Dyke?
Yes.
Robert, my dear. Olivier is one of the greats. Burton, Guinness. Greats without question. I can assure you that Dick Van Dyke is not... But a one-man band plays to a small gathering outside the gates to the park. Bert, yes, Bert says you can do Bert.
Thank you.
Go on.
Guys, shall we...
The men leave the table.
Give it a whirl.
What's happening? What are you doing?
Dick sits down to play. Don reads.
All right, ladies and gents, comical poem suitable for the occasion, extemporized and thought up before your very eyes. All right, here we go.
Room here for everyone, gather around. The constable's responsible. Now, how does that sound?
No. Responsible is not a word.
We made it up.
Well, unmake it up.
She crosses it out. Dick hides his score for a song beginning supercalifragilistic with an uneasy look. In the hotel, Pamela pushes her supper tray out of the door with her bare foot. She lies on her back in bed.
Responsible.
In the outback, Ginty's sitting on the parched yellow grassland some distance from the house, snapping twigs for a toy house she's building. Her father rides towards her on the back of his white horse as she places an oak leaf roof onto four sticks.
There's my girl.
He's a good boy, come on.
That's it, I will give Ginty a speech. There you go.
He sits on the ground next to her, shirt sleeves rolled up, braces holding up his trousers.
Poor old Albert. He's your secret uncle, you know. But a miserable, horrid witch turned him into a nag.
Why did she do that?
She said she hated the sound of his laugh.
Poor Uncle Albert.
Yeah.
How can we fix him?
We have to teach the witch to be happy again.
How?
I'm not quite sure, darling.
His dark eyes look deeply into her face.
You want to know what it feels like to fly, Ginty? Come on.
Albert!
You old nag. Come here.
He jumps bareback onto the horse.
Up you go.
Ginty climbs up and sits with her back to the horse's head.
3, 2, 1. You trust me?
Yes.
She wraps her arms around her father's neck.
Yeah!
They gallop off. In L.A., the limousine glides smoothly along a pristine palm-lined, empty boulevard of substantial houses. Pamela looks out of the window with interest.
Nobody walks.
Leisurely stroll's a gift.
She turns to look at the driver. He cracks a baleful smile. She turns back to look out of the window. The limo drives down a steep, winding hill towards the broad Los Angeles Valley and the distant mountains on the horizon.
Beautiful, ain't it?
If you like that sort of thing.
I do.
His cheeriness slightly unsettles her. In the outback, Albert the White Horse carries father and daughter through high yellow grasses, the sunlight forming a golden corona around Ginty's bouncing curls. In the rehearsal room, the tape machine is on, and Don is showing Pamela some sketches on a board.
Would you find it's helpful to have a visual? Plus, it's fun.
Oh, no, no. No, no, goodness me, no.
No?
The Banks' house doesn't look like that. No, no. My house is a terraced house with a pink door, white bricked with a crack in the gable.
Okay, we get it. The house is not what you pictured.
The windows are lead-lined, and the flower boxes grow pink nasturtiums to go with the pink door. We got that? And this, oh, dear. It's all a big mistake. It's all wrong.
It's all wrong?
Well, it's too grand. It's the Bankses are normal, everyday sort of people. And this isn't normal. This isn't everyday. They're not aristocrats.
She moves to the next sketch, showing the Bankses' two children. Dolly follows her with her cup of tea. They come to the parrot handle of Mary Poppins's umbrella.
Okay.
The Shermans nod with a relief. She moves to the next one, peering through her specs.
Oh, do I even have to say it?
I'm afraid so.
Why in the world have you made Mrs. Banks a silly suffragette?
I wonder if Emmeline P. would agree with that adjective.
Quite possibly, looking back.
It does seem strange that Mrs. Banks allows her kids to spend all of their time with the nanny when she doesn't have a job to speak of.
Are you calling Mrs. Banks neglectful?
Yep. No, of course not. We just thought that giving her a job would go some way to
explain. Being a mother is a job. It's a very difficult job, and one that not everyone is up to, one that not everyone should have taken on in the first place. And I won't have her called Cynthia. Absolutely not. It feels unlucky. It leaves me something warm. Something a bit, I don't know, sexy. How about Mavis?
Sybil?
Great.
Prudence?
Gwendolyn.
Perfect.
Winifred?
Winifred. Winifred. I could go with Winifred.
That's because it's very good.
She crosses to another drawing.
This isn't Mr. Banks. This isn't him.
Yes, that's Mr. Banks.
But he has a set of moustaches.
In the book, he has.
No, I told the illustrator I did not like the facial hair, but she chose to ignore me. Now, this time around, this is my film, and I shall have my way.
Mrs. Travers, this is a specific request from Walt.
Why?
Well, I think he identifies...
He didn't. He doesn't. Mr. Banks is clean-shaven.
Does it matter?
She runs on Bob.
Does it matter, Bob?
You can wait outside.
Bob, sitting in a chair, blinks in surprise.
I shan't say it again, Robert.
With a resigned, disbelieving smile, he pulls himself up, grabs his walking stick, and limps out of the room.
What is wrong with his leg?
He got shot.
It's hardly surprising. Can I expect any more drama from anyone else?
Dick shakes his head like a little schoolboy.
Later,
she comes down the concourse of the hotel and presses the lift button. She looks towards the wood-paneled hotel bar, full of people chatting. For a moment, she hesitates, then gets into the lift. In Australia, Ginty's watching her father shaving with a cutthroat razor.
Why do you do that?
For you, my dear. Tell me, Gintamina, which kind of kisses do you prefer? Scratchy ones or silky ones?
Silky ones.
Well then, swish, swoosh. A man must shave for to spare his daughter's cheeks.
She's leaning on her arms in the window, gazing adoringly at him. Pamela swishes her hand across the steamed-up mirror in the bathroom and peers at her reflection.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious!
Stop! 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 What on earth are you talking about? Or whatever the infernal thing is.
It's something you say when you don't know what to say.
Well, I always know what to say. If you so much as step one foot in here with that trolley, I shall scream. One cannot live on cake alone.
Dolly, with her laden trolley, hurries away.
Well, hit me with it.
She has a lot of ideas.
Yeah? What kind of ideas?
The name Cynthia has been changed to Winifred.
Fine, fine.
She won't approve Dick Van Dyke. The sketches of the Banks house make it look too opulent. There must be no hint of romance between Mary Poppins and Bert. She wants to know why Mr. Banks has been given a mustache.
Oh, I asked for that.
Yes, they told her that, but she wants to know why.
Because I asked for it.
Right. Of course. The tape measure Mary Poppins uses to record Jane and Michael's height must be a roll tape, not a ruler. She only wants green vegetables and broth. I don't know what that is, but she wants it in the room from now on. And, oh, she doesn't want the color red in the film.
Well, stiffens.
At all.
I've simply gone off the color.
We can't make the picture without the color red. The film is set in London, for Pete's sake.
And?
Well, there's buses and mailboxes and guards' uniforms and things. And heck, the English flag.
I understand your predicament, Mr. Disney, I do. It's just... I don't know what it is. I'm suddenly very anti-red. I shan't be wearing it ever again.
Dick's wearing a red waistcoat.
Is this a test, Pamela? Are you requiring proof as to how much I want to make you happy so we can create this beautiful thing together?
I took you at your word, Mr. Disney. And it seems my first stipulation has been denied. There will be many more. So perhaps we should just call it quits. And I should hand you back these.
In her neat, blue wool dress, Pamela waves the rights in Walt's face, and his whole being becomes rigid. With a nod, he turns to his team.
All right. No red in the picture.
Walt!
Pamela smiles smugly as he strides out. Then he stops. She throws her tightly curled head back, fanning herself with the document. With a snort, he goes.
He doesn't have the rights.
Quite.
The team look helplessly at each other. Walt observes Pamela from his office window.
Tommy!
Tommy, his PA, brings him a drink.
Scotch mist.
What do you think?
What do I think? What?
You're a woman.
Oh, that's a canny observation, Walt.
What am I missing here?
You think the female of the species has some sort of psychic insight when it comes to others of her kind? We don't. You're going to get an ulcer with all that unriddling. Give it up.
She goes back to her desk.
A woman.
Pamela, with a stylish cardigan around her shoulders, matching her blue dress, hurries towards the lift. Her face betraying no emotion, she looks in the direction of the bar. Smoothing down her dress and picking off any stray flecks, she sets her lipstick mouth and walks towards the discreetly lit bar. She looks about her and then approaches the bar. A black barman in a cream tuxedo addresses her.
Good afternoon. do, ma'am. What can I fix you?
A pot of tea, if you please.
Sure thing.
She perches on a bar stool and observes the sophisticated clientele. The barman brings her tea for one, served in white china.
Tea has balm for the soul. Don't you agree?
The barman's already moved off, blinking back her slight embarrassment. She remembers when she and her little sister chased a black hen through lines of washing.
Girls, will you please just stop?
Margaret, holding the baby, is pegging sheets to a line.
In you go. All right.
She lays the baby into her pram. The father comes running up.
Ahoy, goths! Ahoy!
Oh, that's better.
He picks both girls up in his arms. Margaret grins with delight.
What a wonderful surprise. How did you finish early?
No, I couldn't stop thinking of my beautiful girls on this beautiful day in this beautiful place. And I thought, to hell with it.
Don't you have work to do with
it? But.
He bends Margaret back in his arms.
Butts are for goats, my love.
Ginty watches stiffly as her father kisses her mother.
I'll put an extra house tomorrow.
He brings a pear out of his jacket pocket.
A gift of a pear for my lady.
Margaret curtsies.
Thank you.
Now, what are we playing?
The hangar and we've been trying to catch her.
Huh.
Slowly he pulls back a sheet to reveal the black hen skulking behind it.
That's no hen. That's Aunt Ellie. Your mother's horrendiferous sister!
That's a made-up word.
Yes, it is. Hurry, catch her before she flies away on the...
West wind.
West wind.
Margaret picks up her husband's suit jacket that he dropped into the laundry basket and finds an almost empty bottle of scotch in the inside pocket.
That way. Oh, she's a foul.
She drops to her knees with a look of foreboding as the hen chase goes on around her. At night, in their bedroom.
Darling, it's just that I'm a little scared.
Meg, sweet. I had a throat scratch.
But the bank is getting you down again. But perhaps my sister can help.
No. God, no. I can endure. I will endure. For the girls. Just, please. Oh, God. Not Ellie.
Margaret reaches out and touches his shoulder. He takes her hand. In the next door room, Ginty lies on her back in the bed she shares with her little sister.
She's a foul.
In L.A., Dick is pacing.
It's gotta be like a slogan.
Her prescription for life.
An apple a day.
A stitch in time.
Time and tide wait for no man.
Don is sketching a caricature of Pamela saying no, no, no. Bob has an idea.
Sugar.
Sugar? Yeah?
Jeff had vaccination day at school yesterday.
Ouch.
No ouch.
No ouch?
Sugar. They put it in a cube.
Medicine in sugar?
Cube's an odd word. Spoonful.
You need sugar? We have sugar.
Pamela arrives.
Well, morning. May I walk with you?
I'm sure there aren't any laws in your country against it.
A robin feathering his nest has very little time to rest.
Go back to the chorus.
For a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. The medicine...
It's missing...
Wait. She always does the unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
She goes up the banisters.
Go up.
Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
That's it.
Man is in the forest. I want you to play that for him.
Well, hold on.
What's yours? It's just a chorus.
Tell us what you think.
Pamela turns on the tape.
He knows. across the medicine, go down, the medicine, go down, medicine, go down. Just a spoonful of sugar hops the medicine, go down, in the da-da-da-da-da.
We'll work out the rest of the lyrics.
You see how it goes up on the word down?
On the word down, it goes up.
It's ironic.
Well, forget ironic. That's iconic. I won't be able to stop singing that for weeks. Da, da, da,
da. Well, it seems enormously patronizing to me. Just the sort of annoying tune you'd have playing in your themed park, I dare say. All giddy and carefree, encouraging children to face the world unarmed. All they need is a spoon and some sugar and a brain full of fluff, and they're equipped with life's tools. Wonderful.
Well, what's your point, Pam?
Mrs. Travers, please. My point is that, unlike yourself, Mary Poppins is the very enemy of whimsy and sentiment. She's truthful. She doesn't sugarcoat the darkness in the world that these children will eventually, inevitably, come to know. She prepares them for it. She deals in honesty. One must clean one's room. It won't magically do it by itself. This entire script is flim-flam. Hmm? Where is its heart? Where is its reality? Where is the gravitas?
Tightening her red lips, she makes her way to the window and flings out the whole script. Its pages float through the air like snow.
No, wait, Mr. Disney. See?
No whimsy or sentiment, says the woman who sent a flying nanny with a talking umbrella to save the children.
You think Mary Poppins has come to save the children, Mr. Disney? Oh, dear.
In Allora, an elderly man in a top hat and tailcoat crosses the unpaved street just as Ginty comes up.
Mr. Bell Hatchett.
Good afternoon.
She's wearing a dark grey hat and carrying a book.
Afternoon, my dear. Allow me.
Mr. Bell Hatchett opens the door for the little redhead. Ned Tantrum. Ginty's father spots Bell Hatchett through the glass window of his office.
I want you gone.
Ginty. Sweet thing. What are you doing here?
You said today was ice cream day.
Ice cream day? Yes, I did. Of course, of course. What kind of a father am I? Come in.
He beckons Ginty to come to him.
Are you fired again?
Yes, it does. That same.
No, sweetheart. No. He's not.
Wait inside for a second.
He leads her into his office.
Mr. Bell, I didn't...
If you can't straighten up for your own sake, do it for your daughter. Responsible.
Ginty's father nods numbly. He looks at Ginty's steadfast, trusting face. Later, they sit by a lake. She's eating ice cream. He's sipping from his hip flask. As he wipes the corner of her mouth, she gives him a loving smile.
We share a Celtic soul, you and I. This world is just an illusion, Ginty Helgo. As long as we hold that thought dear, they can't break us. They can't make us endure their reality. Bleak and bloody as it is.
He takes another sip.
Money. Money, money. Don't you buy into it, Ginty? Bite you on the butt.
She licks her ice cream cornet and he sips some more. At the hotel, a tray stands outside Pamela's room. She's on the phone.
I loathe this place, Mr. Russell. It's bringing up these... It's so hot and stuffy. I feel as if I'm being attacked. It's these odd dreams. As if my subconscious were after me, punishing me. for entertaining the idea that I might hand her over. I'm at war with myself, Mr. Russell. The script's ghastly. Empty pap, just as I expected. Yes. A few more days, then I'll decide.
She lays the phone to one side and eases herself down the bed in her aquamarine satin nightdress. She sinks her head onto her pillow and studies her pill bottles, one by one.
Serves me right. My money, money, money. Bit me on the bot.
She looks up, then steps down from the bed in bare feet, her nails carefully varnished red. She returns to the bed and lies across Mickey Mouse's comforting soft belly. Over at the studios, Walt Disney sits in the dark on the bench outside his office, his arms folded, looking pensive. He looks up towards the rehearsal room. Dick cracks a smile at Walt.
That'll work. But she's gonna say no, isn't she? The woman's a conundrum.
Dick quietly produces another page of sheet music.
My world was calm, well ordered, exemplary. Then came this person with chaos in her wake. And now my life's ambitions go with one failed blow. It's quite a bitter pill to take.
Inspired by someone we know?
You'd have to ask Bob. She might surprise us all.
No, 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 she won't.
You don't know that.
No, I do. I do know it. I know it only too well. I fought this battle from her side. Pat Powers. Oh, he wanted the mouse. And I didn't have a bean in my pocket back then. He was this big, terrifying New York producer. I was just a kid from Missouri with a sketch of Mickey. Would have killed me to give him up. Honest to God, would have killed me. That mouse, his family.
Dick nods sympathetically.
Go home.
Walt leaves the rehearsal room, and Dick switches off his piano light. Pamela sits on a lounger staring into the turquoise water of the swimming pool.
This world, it's just an illusion, Kintyoko.
She closes her eyes. Ginty, sitting on the steps of the porch, has her eyes tightly shut. Her father comes up to her, a lock of dark hair falling across his forehead.
Ah, the Countess Mary Sparklestick. Pray tell me, what are you concentrating so hard on?
I'm laying eggs.
Really? Fabulous.
Today, I'm a hen.
Indeed. I can see the feathers sprouting as we speak.
Helen Goff, will you lay the table for supper, please?
I'm not Helen.
She can't possibly lay the table. She's busy laying eggs.
Margaret reddens.
Helen, will you lay the table for supper, please?
She's lying! Sorry.
Margaret backs away.
Ginty. Don't you ever stop dreaming, Ginty, my love. You can be anyone you want to be.
I want to be just like you.
He kisses Kinty's hand, his eyes welling.
Don't.
He goes inside. Dropping his suit jacket on the porch. Ginty gets up to follow him and looks into the house. She creeps along the porch to the other side and sees him propping himself up against a wall, drawing a bottle from his trouser pocket, pulling the cork out with his teeth, and glugging it all down. In the limo, Pamela's face is somber. Her driver catches her expression in his rearview mirror.
You right, Mrs.?
She doesn't hear him or Don in the rehearsal room.
Mrs. Travers?
Mrs. Travers?
She looks round.
We were saying we'd like to play you the song in the bank. Would that be good?
Fidelity Fiduciary Bank.
I am Dawes. Sure, you have toughies. May I be permitted to see it?
No, I wanted to feed the birds, Michael says.
Fiddlesticks, boy! Feed the birds, and what do you got?
Fat birds!
But if you invest your tuppence wisely in the bank, safe and sound...
Her mind wanders back to the Allera Funfair. One man leads a kangaroo on the lead.
Mrs. Burroughs says Father's presenting the medals.
He is indeed, on behalf of the bank.
Maybe he'll pin one on me for the maple.
He might.
Where is Father?
I think he's practicing his speech somewhere.
He's standing in line for some candy floss. He sees some guys knocking back a beer and licks his parched lips. Pamela sinks back into her reverie.
Father!
Ginty, in her broad-brimmed hat, goes looking for her father. She runs towards the refreshment tent and walks slowly up to the entrance. Her sister Biddy dances happily around a maypole with other little girls, all in lacy white dresses. Margaret, carrying the baby, stands between the children's merry-go-rounds and looks around uneasily. Ginty steps into the refreshment tent and looks about her. She spots her father reveling with a glass of whiskey in his hand. He drains the glass. Pamela at the window of the rehearsal room, her lips tightly drawn, her blue eyes woeful, is deaf to the showman's singing. Her father steps up onto a wooden podium, emblazoned with the words Belhatchet Bank of Australia, in front of a big crowd, among them Margaret and the girls.
Why is he speaking for the bank?
He is the manager, sir.
He looks terrible.
Good afternoon, distinguished guests. Our biggest supporter, Mr. Randolph Bell Hatchett, and his lovely wife. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I'm honored to be here on behalf of the Bell Hatchett Bank of Australia. Shortly, it will be my very pleasant duty to present the awards to our young performers. But before I begin, allow me a very few words to our very youngest citizens about the role of the bank in our community.
When you deposit tuppence in a bank account, soon
you'll see
that it blooms into credit of a
generous amount,
semi-annually, and you'll achieve that sense of stature as your influence expands to the high financial strata that established credit now commands.
You can purchase first and second trustee.
Think of the foreclosures,
bonds,
chattels, dividends,
shares,
bankruptcies, debtor sales,
opportunities,
all manner of private
enterprise, shipyards, the mercantile,
collieries,
tanneries,
incorporations,
amalgamations,
banks!
Thanking you kindly. Thank you.
He coughs up blood. Margaret looks uneasy.
It's a marvelous thing to encourage our children to open bank accounts. Marvelous thing. My daughter, the Princess Ginty, she's... How old are you? Come up here.
Glancing at her mother,
come, Ginty.
Ginty joins her father on the podium.
Ginty has an account, and that's good. Well, give her a drink. I mean, give her a hand.
Margaret looks embarrassed.
I shall return in just a few moments to present the awards, but right now, I need to relieve myself.
Bill Hatchett stiffens.
Use your shoulder, Ginty, will you? Mercy. Here's a good girl.
He rests his hand on Ginty's shoulder, but topples off the podium. He winces with pain, but then bursts out laughing. Pamela's eyes fill with tears. Ginty looks on helplessly. Margaret covers her mouth. Pamela stands in front of a sketch of Mr. Banks.
Why did you have to make him so cruel? He was not a monster.
Who are we talking about? I'm confused.
You all have children, yes?
Yes.
Well, and do those children make letters for you? Do they write letters? Do they make you drawings? And would you tear up those gifts in front of them? It's a dreadful thing to do. I don't understand. Why must Father tear up the advertisement his children have made and throw it in the fireplace? Why won't he mend their kite? Why have you made him so unspeakably awful? In glorious technicolor, for all the world to see. If you claim to make them live, why can't he... They live well. I can't bear it. Please don't. Please don't. I feel like I let him down again.
Who's traveled?
Ginty's father is lying in bed at home.
I don't suppose you can give me any more for the pain.
The local doctor turns to face him with an unsympathetic expression.
When will enough be enough, Travers?
McGinty, Helen Goff, waits for the doctor to leave, then steps towards her father's bed.
I brought you something, Father.
Be a darling, Ginty, my old pal.
His face is running sweat.
I'm sick. You'll help Father out, won't you?
She nods eagerly.
In the washroom. There's a pot of medicine that Father needs.
Mother took it away. I wrote you a poem, Father. It won first place at school. Shall I read it to you, Father?
He snatches it from her. He reads the poem with trembling hands. Then gives it back to her.
It's hardly Yeats, is it?
Though cruelly admonished, she looks at him with devoted eyes. He stares straight ahead as if no longer aware of her. She runs across the kitchen, climbs onto a chair and searches the top shelf. She looks in all the possible places a bottle might be hidden. In LA, Pamela hurries out of the studio building, tapping the sleeve of her wine-coloured cardigan. She looks down at a patch of grass and picks something up. A driver, eating a sandwich with a newspaper spread across his knees, watches her picking at the lawn. Years before, Ginty plunged her hands into a compost shed, first coming up with a wilted vegetable, and then, after another scrabble, with a half-full bottle of whiskey. She runs back into the house with it. With her tight auburn curls catching a ray of sunlight, Pamela methodically arranges some leaves and twigs in the making of a house. The driver, carrying a plastic cup, finds her sitting under a tree.
Missus?
I brought you a tea.
It's blasphemy to drink tea from a paper cup.
Oh,
She reaches up to take it.
Is everything okay, missus? You know, I'm gonna drive you home?
All the way to England, yes, please.
You got family back there, missus?
You're an impertinent man, you know. You ask an awful lot of questions that have absolutely no relevance to your being able to carry out your duties.
I know, yeah, I do that, yes.
And you have no barometer. Let's just say I haven't family who would notice whether I were halfway across the world or sitting in my living room. Make a furrow.
There. That's a good stick for digging.
He joins her in her task.
I got a kid.
Most people do.
Jane. Yeah. What a terrific kid. Beautiful little girl. She's got a lot of problems, though. She's handicapped, you know. She's in a wheelchair. See, and that's why I concern myself with the weather so much. Sunny day, she can sit outside in the garden. Rainy day, I'm gonna leave her cooped up inside.
Pamela sticks the paper cup top onto one of the twigs.
Worry about the future. But you can't do that. Only today. Yeah.
Now, look, it's a bandstand.
She pours the tea into the furrow he has dug.
A river.
Lake.
Hey, I sure would like to take her there.
Wouldn't that be nice?
In her bedroom, Ginty lies on her side. She shuffles onto her back and becomes aware of her mother standing in the doorway.
Mother. I know you gave it to him. Take care of your sisters. I know you love your father more. But one day, you will understand.
Margaret gives her a fevered smile. She turns away.
Mother!
Ginty gets out of bed and follows her mother across the porch. Her mother's ghost-like figure, in her long white nightgown, steps down from the porch.
Mother.
She rocks the baby swing as she passes
Mother.
It. She walks off. Ginty turns towards her baby sister's cries, and then to her mother, walking trance-like across the dry grass. Ginty climbs onto Albert's back. She rides off after her mother, who has reached the edge of the lake, with a strange, unnatural smile fixed to her face. She steps down into the black water. Ginty rides up on the white horse, slides off its back,
Mother!
And runs after her mother, who's already waist-deep in the lake. She wades into the murky water. Margaret doesn't appear to hear her.
Mother! Mother!
Ginty grabs her mother's nightgown. Her mother turns to face her, as if waking from a nightmare.
It's time to go home.
Margaret nods obediently, her face dissolving in tears. And she throws herself into Ginty's arms. In her hotel room, Pamela sits on her bed going through the script.
Mr. Disney.
I'm calling to, have a checkup on you. I understand things didn't go so well today. Something about Mr. Banks?
They went as well as they've gone on every other day that I've been here. I don't recall any special phone calls from you on any of those other evenings.
Pam, what's this all about? I mean, really. I'm wondering what I have to do to make you happy.
Oh.
And you're wondering that too, aren't you? You know, you've never been to Disneyland. And that's the happiest place on earth. Tommy, cancel my morning tomorrow. I'm going to take a ride with my favorite author.
No, please, Mr. Disney. I cannot begin to tell you how uninterested, no, positively sickened I am at the thought of visiting your dollar printing machine.
Well, for crying out loud, when does anybody get to go to Disneyland with Walt Disney himself?
Disappointments are to the soul what the thunderstorm is to the air. Hello?
He slams down the phone. She shakes the receiver.
He hung up.
Walt comes down the corridor to the rehearsal room, where Don, Dick and Bob are slumped around the work table.
Guys, we gotta fix this.
A horse-drawn carriage drives up to the Travers house, bringing a woman in a broad black hat. Ginty is mopping her father's brow.
Winds from the east.
The aunt.
Aunt Ellie, dressed entirely in black, steps onto the porch silhouetted against the light, carrying an umbrella like a scepter in one hand and a cloth bag in the other. The thin-faced woman looks around at the mess. She drops her bag. Ginty's exhausted mother appears in a doorway, Her stern-looking sister points her parrot-headed umbrella.
Oh, dear.
She unpacks her heavy carpet bag, first of all spraying the air.
Now, I've brought every newfangled treatment available in Sydney.
She has a case of potions. She brings out a pineapple.
Close your mouth, Biddy. We are not a codfish.
From the capacious bag, she brings out a red plant in a pot, which she hands to blonde Biddy.
Now, I see a multitude of jobs that need to be done.
I've just been, being so worried.
Stop your babbling nonsense.
She brings out a china cup and saucer.
I'm here now, and I shall fix everything. I thought I made it perfectly clear that you two ought to start helping. Spit spot!
In the back of the limo, Pamela frowns to herself.
Where are we? This isn't the way.
Change of venue this morning, apparently.
The limo glides towards the gates of Disneyland. Two uniformed guards open the gates to the amazement of the onlookers, and there in front of a huge Mickey Mouse flower bed stands Walt Disney himself.
Wow! There he is! Living and breathing! Oh, boy!
The limousine drives in through the gates. It pulls up in front of Mr. Disney. Walt reaches for the door.
I can get that.
Mr. Travers, welcome to the Magic Kingdom.
Pamela steps out looking as if she's been sucking on lemons.
Is it all like this?
Yep. You know, wonderful.
Do you always get everything you want, Walter?
Well, pretty much.
With the exception of the rights to my books, of course.
Well, warrant over yet, Pam. Warrant over yet.
I love you so much.
Oh, oh. Hey. Well, sure, sure.
He hands out signed cards to the adoring crowd.
There you go.
Pre-signed.
Hey, you should get hers, too. This woman is a bona fide genius.
Pamela looks appalled.
Tour starts this way, Pam.
Two Gawkers appearing into the limo.
Whoa. Move along. Move along. Up. That's good.
Each section of the park has a high point, so you can get your bearings. In Adventureland, there's a tree. This is a fun fact. This is a titbit. It's got 3 million leaves, 4 million flowers.
Gosh.
They said only God can make a tree.
Sir, would you mind signing this?
No. Leave one better. There you go. Have a great day.
Thanks so much.
Walt glances up at the words Elias Disney written on a first floor window. They stroll down Main Street.
Where did she come from?
Who?
Oh, I think you know.
She flew in through the window one day.
Flew in through the window. It's just that easy, is it, Mr. Travers? You see those spires? Plated with 24-karat gold. Roy was against it, so I waited till he was out of town to get it done.
How clever.
Now, I know you don't want to be here, so I'm just going to take you to one ride, my favorite amusement, and then I'll set you free. Hello, folks. How are you? Enjoy the day. Hey, kids. Ernie. Thank you so much. Excuse me. Mrs. Travers, I would be honored if you would take a ride on Jingles here. It's Mrs. Disney's favorite horse.
No, thank you. I'm happy to watch.
Now, there's no greater joy than that seen through the eyes of a child. There's a little bit of child in all of us.
Maybe in you, Mr. Disney, but certainly not in me.
Get on the horse, Pamela.
She tries to demur, but then obeys.
Now, when we first met, you said to me they're family.
I said what?
Mary Poppins. The Bankses are family. The boys have come up with an idea for Mr. Banks. I think it's going to make you happy.
You didn't bring me all the way out here to tell me that.
Oh, no. I brought you all the way out here for monetary gain. Had a wager with the boys. Couldn't get you on a ride. I just won $20. Yeah!
Clutching the vertical gold-painted support pole, Pamela watches Walt spreading his pixie dust charm. She observes his natural ease with his fans. A slow, if somewhat reluctant, smile spreads across her face. She raises her eyes to the circling mirrors above her head, and resting her head on the gold-painted pole, her mind goes back to herself, watching another carousel at the Allure Fair, and her efficient aunt bringing the house to order.
Well begun, it's half done.
As Biddy tries to beat a carpet that Eddie is holding, Margaret empties out a bucket. Ginty, sweeping the porch, looks into her father's bedroom. His hand falls limply on the bed, clutching a bloodied handkerchief. Seeing Ginty's earnest face at the window, he smiles weakly, a trickle of blood oozing from his mouth. As Pamela arrives in the rehearsal room clutching her script, Dolly hangs up a sash and Don pulls a script board across the room.
Morning, Miss Stroud.
What horrors have you in store for my beautiful characters today?
You sit here.
Don pulls out a chair.
What are you up to?
We were thinking about what you said, and you're right. Mr. Banks isn't cruel. He isn't. So we have a new end for the film. Oh, God, I hope you like it.
Dick slides behind the piano. Don, Bob and Dolly stand in a line. Don and Dolly drop to their knees. Bob stands between them holding a kite. Pamela frowns. Bob steps towards her and offers her the kite.
Michael says...
Did you manage it?
He mended the kite.
With tuppence for paper and strings, you can have your own set of wings. With your feet on the ground, you're a bird in flight, with your fist holding tight to the string of your kite.
All three link arms.
Let's go fly a kite. She gets the suffragette ribbon and says...
A proper kite deserves a proper tail, don't you think?
Pamela's foot starts to tap.
Let's go fly a kite up to the highest height. Let's go fly a kite and send it soaring up through the atmosphere.
His hand to Pamela, inviting her to dance.
You send it flying up there. All at once, you're lighter than air. You can dance on the breeze of our houses and trees.
As he swings her round, Dolly beams and scuttles out of the rehearsal room.
Mr. Disney, Walter, I'm Sarah Dana Rutt. It's just she's dancing. Mrs. Travers, she's dancing with Dawn.
Walt and Tommy's jaws drop.
Let's go fly a kite up to the highest height.
At the piano, Pamela taps Dick's shoulder.
Fly a kite and send it soaring up through the atmosphere, up where the air is clear. Oh, let's go.
Love it.
Huge relief all round.
Although the proper English would be let us go and fly a kite. As let us go and fly a kite. I might be willing to overlook that.
All right.
Bob ruffles his brother's hair. Good. In her father's room, Ginty, standing vigil at the end of his bed, is gazing out of the window. His eyes half open.
Look at you.
She turns to him with a shy smile.
I rewrote the poem, Father.
She comes closer to him and holds out her hand.
The aunt gave me tuppence. Shall I buy you something, Father?
Pamela lies in bed.
Father.
Ginty skips down the porch steps.
Tuppence for pears.
The black limo comes sedately down the winding hill towards the valley. Pamela, sitting in the back, looks out with a softness in her eyes.
You're quite right, you know. It is beautiful. Exquisite.
It's always nil.
A faint smile comes to her lips as she looks out at the passing scenery.
So, Jolly Holiday is in?
By all means.
Wonderful.
I do have a question about it, actually. How in the world does Mr. Disney propose to train all the penguins to dance? I've heard about his implausibly leave trees, so I presume he does have some insane penguin wrangling scheme, but it does seem a little far-fetched, even for him. Can you train a penguin to dance?
No, I don't think you can train.
They're animated.
Dick.
Bob bites his lip.
They're what?
Cartoons.
Dick.
Pamela's face freezes. Don gives Bob a look.
What?
She strides out of the room.
Are we getting real penguins?
Yes, 2 o'clock Tuesday. Good afternoon, Mrs. Travers.
I'm here to see Mr. Disney.
Oh, please have it. Mrs. Travers.
Disney!
Please.
Travers? Mrs. Travers?
She steams into Walt's room.
I'm terribly sorry, Walt.
All right, Tommy, just close the door. Never let anyone see me smoking. I hate to encourage bad habits. Please sit down.
I shall not sit in the seat of a trickster, a fraudster, a sneak.
Pamela.
Mrs. Travers, please.
Mrs. Travers, what has you so upset now?
Penguins. Penguins have very much upset me, Mr. Disney. Animated dancing penguins. Now you have seduced me with the music, Mr. Disney. Yes, you have. Those Sherman boys have quite turned my head. But I shall not be moved upon the matter of cartoons, sir. Not one inch.
It is a sequence.
You promised me that this film would not be an animation.
And it isn't.
So they're real penguins.
No, they are animated. But the actors, you see, the actors are very, very much real.
Foolish old woman. Yeah, good day, Mr. Disney.
She hands back the unsigned rights form.
Pamela. Pam!
Surrounded by his many creations and his shelf full of Oscars, Walt Disney is lost for words.
Dolly, would you be so kind as to ring my driver and ask him to collect me?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Dolly's doll-like eyes follow Pamela as she slips out through the door.
Here we are, Mrs.
Thank you.
The limo has arrived at the airport. The driver glances at Pamela as he opens the boot.
It's been a real pleasure driving you, Mrs.
No one likes a fibber.
No. I really have enjoyed it. I didn't know who you were at first. And then guess what?
You found out?
Well, I was telling my daughter all about my day. Now I'm driving this nice writer lady, Mrs. Travers, for Mr. Disney. And?
He reaches into the front seat.
And she made me go to her bedroom and bring her this. I can't stop reading it, you know. I mean, I'm very slow, mind you, so.
Would you like me to sign it?
Would you?
I'd be honored.
What?
He fishes for a pen.
Jane and her dearest father. I've just this instant realized I don't know your name.
Ralph.
Pamela.
She looks him in the eye.
You're the only American I've ever liked, Ralph.
Oh. Well, may I ask why?
No. Now, take this.
Albert Einstein, Van Gogh, Roosevelt, Frida Kahlo?
Carlo.
Carlo? What is this?
They all have difficulties. Jane can do anything that anyone else can do. Do you understand?
Ralph nods, as if he doesn't quite understand.
Oh, almost forgot. Turn it around.
Walt Disney.
Hyperactive behavior and deficiencies in concentration. It explains everything.
She goes into the terminal, and Ralph cracks a wry smile.
Thank you, Mrs.
Walt joins Dolly and Tommy in their outer office.
She acted like an angry person a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, she's come and gone, huh?
Yeah, flight left 10 minutes ago.
Beverly Hills Hotel, private limousine, first class plane taken back to England for... Right. Goff. Who is Helen Goff?
That's her. That's her real name.
She acts so hoity-toity British, and she's really an Aussie.
Who is Travers?
Dolly shrugs.
I've been talking to the wrong person?
In Allora, the doctor comes out of the house, just as Ginty returns with her purchase. She finds her mother sitting slumped on the floor. She runs to her just as her aunt appears with an armful of bedding.
He's gone.
Ginty looks at the bloodstained sheets Ellie's holding and stumbles towards the bedroom.
Wait, no, you mustn't. Let her go, Margaret.
As she runs, the pears drop to the floor. She stands in the doorway, gazing in. Ellie's schoolmarmy face softens, and she strokes her sister's forehead. Ginty steps into the bedroom and places a hand on her father's lifeless chest. His glassy eyes are open.
I dropped the pears. Sorry, Daddy.
Black-booted Ellie steps past the fallen pears and joins her.
Helen, dear girl.
You promised you would fix everything.
Ellie's thin face registers her failure, and she leaves Ginty alone. A black cab brings Pamela back to her cherry-blossom, tree-lined terraced street. She looks up at the house with a mournful expression. Picking up her elegant luggage and her floral embroidered bag, she mounts the steps to the front door. She looks at her tasteful interior.
Hello, house.
Later, she sits dozing on a chaise longue. She wakes with a start, realizes where she is, puts aside the book she'd been reading, throws off the blanket covering her legs, and staggers to the front door.
Oh, dear God!
It was one heck of a job getting a seat on the very next flight, let me tell you. Miss Travers... I could sure use a nice pot of English tea about now.
Walt is examining Pamela's books as she brings in the tea tray.
Here we are.
Allow me.
Vilkin first, remember?
Uh-huh, I remember. And a spoonful of sugar?
I think I'll have whiskey.
She produces a decanter. He pours whiskey into her tea.
Well, when in Rome.
He pours himself some. Pamela eyes him with a deep frown as he hands her the cup.
You've come to change my mind, haven't you? Beat me into submission.
No, no. I've come because you misjudged me.
How do I misjudge you?
You look at me and you see some kind of Hollywood King Midas. You think I've built an empire and I want your Mary Poppins as just another brick in my kingdom.
And don't you?
Now, if that was all it was, when I suckered up to a cranky, stubborn dame like you for 20 years, I would have saved myself an ulcer. No, you expected me to disappoint you, and so you made sure I did. Well, I think life disappoints you, Mrs. Travers. I think it's done that a lot, and I think Mary Poppins is the only person in your life who hasn't.
Mary Poppins isn't real.
Oh, it's not true, she's not. No. She's as real as can be to my daughters, the thousands of other kids, adults too. She's been there as a nighttime comfort to a heck of a lot of people.
Well, where is she when I need her? I open the door to Mary Poppins, and who should be standing there but Walt Disney?
Mrs. Travers, I'm sorry. I'd hoped this would have been a magical experience for you and for all of us, but I've let you down. And in doing so, I've broken a 20-year-old promise I made to my daughters. I've been racking my brain trying to figure out why this has been so hard for you and I. And, well, you see, I have my own Mr. Banks. Mine had a mustache.
So not true that Disney created man in his own image.
No, it is true that you created yourself in someone else's, yes? You ever been to Kansas City, Miss Travers? You know Missouri at all?
I can't say I do.
Well, it's mighty cold there in the winters. Bitter cold. And my dad, Elias Disney, he owned a newspaper delivery route there. 1,000 papers, twice daily. A morning and an evening edition. And Dad was a tough businessman. He was a save a penny anywhere you can type of fella. So he wouldn't employ delivery boys. No. He used me and my big brother Roy. I was 8 back then, just 8 years old. And like I said, winters are harsh. And old Elias, well, he didn't believe in new shoes until the old ones were worn through. And honestly, Mr. Travers, the snowdrift, sometimes they were up over my head. And we'd push through that snow like it was molasses. Cold and wet, seeping through our clothes and our shoes. Skin peeling from our faces. Sometimes I'd find myself sunk down in that snow, just waking up, because I must have passed out or something, I don't know. And then, well, it was time for school, and I was too cold or wet to figure out equations and things. And, well, then it was right back out in the snow again to get home just before dark. Mother would feed us dinner, and then it was time to go right back out and do it again for the evening edition. You best be quick there, Walt. You better get those newspapers up on that porch and under that storm door. Pop's gonna lose his temper again and show you the buckle end of his belt, boy.
Tears have sprung up in Pamela's eyes.
I don't tell you this to make you sad, Mrs. Travers. I don't. I love my life. I think it's a miracle. I love my dad. He was a wonderful man. But rare is the day when I don't think about that 8-year-old boy delivering newspapers in the snow and old Elias Disney with that strap in his fist. And I am just so tired, Mrs. Travers. I'm tired of remembering it that way. Aren't you tired, too,
Mrs. Travers. Now, we all have our sad tales, but don't you want to finish the story? Let it all go and have a life that isn't dictated by the past? It's not the children she comes to save. It's their father. It's your father. Travers Goff.
He takes a sip of tea.
I don't know what you think you know about me, Walter.
You must have loved and admired him a lot to take his name. It's him this is all about, is it? All of it, everything.
The vertical crease on her forehead deepens.
Forgiveness, Mrs. Travers. It's what I learned from your books.
I don't have to forgive my father. He was a wonderful man.
No. You need to forgive Helen Goff. Life is a harsh sentence to lay down for yourself.
She chews her thin red lips.
Give her to me. Mrs. Travers, trust me with your precious Mary Poppins. I won't disappoint you. I swear, every time a person walks into a movie house, from Leicester Square to Kansas City, they will see George Banks being saved. They will love him and his kids. They will weep for his cares. They will wring their hands when he loses his job. And when he flies that kite. Oh, Mrs. Travers, they will rejoice. They will sing. In movie houses all over the world, in the eyes and hearts of my kids and other kids and mothers and fathers for generations to come, George Banks will be honored. George Banks will be redeemed. George Banks, and all he stands for, will be saved. Well, maybe not in life, but in imagination. Because that's what we storytellers do. We restore order with imagination. We instill hope. Again and again and again. So trust me, Mrs. Travers. Let me prove it to you. I give you my word.
Pamela sits at her table looking at a document. Watching her in the chair opposite with his cheerful smile and round black ears is her big Mickey Mouse toy.
Enough.
She signs the rights. Mickey Mouse silently approves. A poster hoarding above a cinema entrance announces the imminent opening of Disney's film of Mary Poppins. Walt and Tommy come out through the doors.
Make those two changes and I'm sure everything will be just fine. It's fine.
Walt, could I get your approval on that, please?
What is it?
Invitation list to the premiere.
Yeah? This everyone?
It's not everyone.
He glances up at the poster.
Now, there'll be a premiere in London. That'll be more convenient for her. Tommy, this wasn't an easy decision for me, but you know what she's like. We got press interviews, cameras. I need to protect the picture.
Okay.
Tommy gives a doubtful shake of the head. Pamela is at her typewriter at home in a pink and cream dress.
Say so too.
Mrs. Travers!
Will you stop screeching like an alley cat? And answer the door!
Very pleased to hear that, Pamela.
I should think you'll have a draft fairly soon. Polly, where's that tea? It's coming along marvellously. No peeking.
Her maid Polly brings in the tea tray.
Aren't you going to pour it for us?
You're perfectly capable of pouring it yourself.
She's quite the worst maid I've ever had.
So why do you keep her?
I don't know. She reminds me of me.
Do you have a title?
Mary Poppins in the Kitchen.
Wonderful. So, should we start talking about the film rights?
Never again.
Okay. Now, tell me, have you got your tiara for the premiere?
Oh, I'm not going to that.
Why not?
Hollywood premieres aren't for an old chap like me. Anyway,
It's not convenient.
He hasn't invited you, has he? Mary Poppins wouldn't stand for that.
In a plane, Pamela carefully stows her embroidered bag above her seat.
Can I help you?
I'm perfectly capable, thank you.
As I recall.
The air hostess sweeps past.
Sweet of you.
Walt Disney comes into his outer office. Dolly springs to her feet.
Walt!
Hello, Dolly.
Walt.
Tommy, we're going to have to move that meeting with GE.
Tommy's grinning at him.
What?
She tilts her head towards his office. For a second, he falters, then takes a deep breath.
Mrs. Travers!
Me again.
How wonderful to see you.
I'm here for my premiere.
Great!
I didn't receive my invitation, but I just assumed the American Postal Service had fallen down upon the job, as per usual.
She gives him a bright smile.
I will have a replacement sent to your hotel right away.
You're very kind, Mr. Disney. I knew you wouldn't have forgotten me.
Pamela, how could I forget you?
Looking elegant in an ivory gown with a blue satin wrap across one shoulder, Pamela comes out of the hotel.
Good evening.
Hello. Could you please order me a cab?
Absolutely.
Standing on the red carpet, she turns to watch two well-dressed young couples coming into the hotel. A black limo is pulled up outside. Pamela turns and sees Ralph smiling at her. A look of delighted surprise sweeps across her face.
Ralph?
I had a feeling a certain friend of mine might be needing me tonight.
She hurries into his arms.
Hey! Wow! You look like a million bucks.
Thank you.
Let's get you to that ball.
Thank you, Ralph. Thank you.
A crowd is gathered outside Hollywood's legendary Chinese theater for the premiere. Flunkies in red tuxedos with white shirts and black ties wait at the head of the red carpet to greet the arriving guests. Some of Disney's iconic characters are among the throng. Walt waves to the crowd. Disney's man-sized chipmunks wave at the guests. Ralph pulls up outside. Pamela looks nervously through the window. Ralph does the honors, and she steps out, frowning at all the hullabaloo.
This is your night. None of this would be possible without you.
She gives him an uncertain nod and takes a step forward, stepping right back to give his arm a squeeze. She ventures along the red carpet, looking disparagingly at a giant penguin. She passes a girl dressed as Snow White, blowing kisses to the crowd. Faltering, she looks back at Ralph, who gives her an encouraging nod. He watches her as she slowly turns towards the theatre entrance. Where Don and the Sherman brothers are waving as they pose for the cameras, and Walt is being interviewed. Unnoticed by the stream of people, Pamela turns to the poster of mustachioed Mr. Banks in his black bowler hat, stiff collar, and thin black tie. Turning her head, she finds herself face to face with a life-size Mickey Mouse, who offers her his arm. Without demurring, she slides her arm into his, and they proceed into the theatre. Inside, the red and gold curtains open to reveal the cinema screen. Bob comes to sit on one side of Pamela. Dick is on the other. The auditorium darkens. The lights from the silver screen flicker on their faces. Pamela sits with her arms clasped. Walt and the Shermans raise their faces to the screen expectantly.
And snap! The job's a game. And every task you undertake comes a piece of cake, a lark, a spree. It's very clear to see.
Pamela looks exasperated. As Bert dances round, followed by a gaggle of dancing penguins, she covers her face in her hands. Dick catches her look of disapproval. Later, she watches with a smile.
Sometimes a person we love, through no fault of his own, can't see past the end of his nose.
Past the end of his nose?
Well, now there must be some mistake. Your dad's a fine gentleman and he loves you.
I don't think so. You should have seen the look on his face. He doesn't like us at all.
Well, now that don't seem likely, does it? Let's sit down.
Tears spring into her eyes amid images of her troubled father.
I can hear part of him, but the one my aunt goes out to is your father. There he is, in that cold, artless bank day after day, hemmed in by mounds of cold, artless money. I don't like to see any living thing caged up.
Father, in a cage?
He makes cages in all sizes and shapes, you know. Bank shapes, some of them, carpets and all.
Mary Poppins, you won't ever leave us, will you? Whatever would we do without you?
I shall stay until the wind changes.
Her cheeks glisten with tears as on screen Mr. Banks trudges from his house to his office. In her memory, she comes to her father on ice cream day and wraps her arms around his waist. As Mr. Banks walks off along a damp walkway in a foggy, wintry London park, Pamela is overcome. Walt, sitting behind her, puts a hand on her shoulder.
It's all right. It's all right, Mrs. Travers. Mr. Banks, going to be all right, I promise.
It's just, I can't abide cartoons.
He slumps back in his seat.
Oh, let's go fly a kite up to the highest height. Let's go fly a kite and send it. Soaring up through the atmosphere, up where the air is clear.
Pamela is mouthing the words of the song as Mr. Banks skips around the house with his bowler hat and stiff collar askew, his children skipping behind him. And she remembers riding on Albert with her arms clasped around her father's neck. Now she's standing at the door of his room, looking across at him, lying in bed.
Don't leave me.
Never. I promise. I will never leave you.
Pamela smiles at the memory, and of the two of them on the lawn, back in their home, in Maryborough.
Winds in the east. Mist coming in, like something is brewing, about to begin. Can't put my finger on what lies in store, but I feel what's to happen all happened before.
Long, thin palm trees jut up into the blue sky, almost touching the fluffy white clouds. The picture fades to black. Directed by John Lee Hancock. Written by Kelly Marcel and Sue Smith. A black and white still photograph shows Walt Disney with Mrs. Travers. Produced by Ian Colley and Philip Steuer. Julie Andrews is seen shaking hands with Mickey Mouse. Executive producers Paul Tribitz and Christine Langan. Followed by more archive photographs, including the Sherman Brothers at work. Executive producers Andrew Mason, Troy Lum. Director of photography John Schwartzman, ASC. Production designer Michael Corenblith. Film editor Mark Livolsi, ACE. Costume designer Daniel Orlandi. Music by Thomas Newman. Music supervisor Matt Sullivan. Music consultant Richard M. Sherman. Casting by Rona Kress. Co-producer Casey Hodenfeld. The producers wish to acknowledge the work of Valerie Lawson, author of Mary Poppins, She Wrote, The Life of P.L. Travers. All the songs from Mary Poppins were written by Richard Sherman and Robert Sherman. Big Noise from Winnetka, written by Ray Bauduc, Bob Haggart, Bob Crosby, Gil Brodeau, performed by the Swing Masters. One Mint Julep, written by Rudolph Toombs, performed by Ray Charles. Lassie Main Title, written by Les Baxter. Hey Ho, written by Frank Churchill and Larry Morey, performed by the Dave Brubeck Quartet. This Is Not Goodbye, written by Mark Ferrari, Daniel May, performed by Daniel May. The tape machine in the film whirs into action next to a bowl of jelly beans, with the actual recording of the first read-through.
Now, who's reading? And go slowly.
You start, my father. In the early part of the 20th century, 1910, London. At number 17, Cherry Tree Lane, the bank's household is in uproar.
Hold it. Now, I see the Cherry Tree Lane as not too townified on one side of the park. And we'll get you a photograph of 50 Smith Street in order to see that the house is really quite like that, but it has more of a garden than my house had. But it might be useful and amusing to put it in as my house.
See? Upstairs to the nursery, where Mary is measuring up the children with a long row of tape measures. Mary reads off the tape that Jane is... first she says, what kind of material have we got to work with?
No, that we cannot have. Right. That would be quite un-English.
Mrs. Ferrer, basically what we want to do here is use pretty much what you have in the book.
Yes. Now, I want this tape measure to be used because it was a tape measure that my mother had when she was a little girl. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be very nice.
At the end of the course...
Read me all that now.
We are reading it.
No, you read.
You want to bear us.
No, you...
You want the laughter. This is torture.
No, go on. At the end of the chorus... There ought perhaps to have been people in this countryside, you see. Are you making note of this?
Yeah.
And they would be the pearly people. They've been riding and they come here and they see. They know they're not grand enough to eat at this table. You've got this on tape because I think it's important.
Yes.
I'm not going to do this film unless I'm available for it.
Well, we have these tapes also, you
know. No, it's not enough.
He has to feel the impact of it.
Yes. Well, anyway, it brings about whatever it is. Mr. Banks is able. He has a tender, good heart, not a change of heart, because he's always been sweet, but worried with the cares of life.
The reel finishes and the picture fades to black. The cast, P.L. Travers, was played by Emma Thompson, Walt Disney, Tom Hanks, Ginty, Annie Rosie Buckley, Travers Goff, Colin Farrell, Margaret Goff, Ruth Wilson, Ralph Paul Giamatti, Don DeGrady, Bradley Whitford. Robert Sherman was played by B.J. Novak, Richard Sherman, Jason Schwartzman, Biddy, Lily Bigham, Tommy, Kathy Baker, Dolly, Melanie Paxson, Mr. Bell Hatchett, Andy McPhee, Aunt Ellie, Rachel Griffiths, Diamond Russell, Ronan Vibert, Premier MC, Jerry Hall, Woman with Infant, Laura Waddell. Flight Attendant, Fuchsia Kate Sumner. Doctor, David Ross Patterson. Polly, Michelle Arthur. Porter, Michael Swinehart. Doorman, Bob Rush. Refreshment Tent Man, Paul Tassoni. Waiter, Luke Baines. Bartender, Demetrius Gross. Bank Clerk, Stephen Cabral. Katie Nana, Kimberly Darmond. Young Woman, Mia Serafino. Nanny Claire, Claire Bocking. Lillian Disney, Dendry Taylor. A Ruby Films, Essential Media and Entertainment Production. The audio description was by Veronica Hicks for IMS. This film is dedicated to Diane Disney Miller, 1933 to 2013.